Okay, can we talk about how confusing weight loss has become? Like, one minute it's carbs are bad, and then the next it's, no, actually carbs are fine, but only if you walk 10,000 steps and drink a green juice, and honestly, it's just a lot. And then even if you do lose the weight, keeping it off is a whole different story. If you're struggling and want something that fits your real life, Hers can help. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals in a way that actually fits your life. That's why Weight Loss by Hers is getting so much attention right now.
Hers connects you with licensed medical providers who create doctor-developed treatment plans tailored to you.
They offer access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. It helps regulate your appetite so you eat less and keep the weight off. If you're ready to reach your goals and want to try something new, visit forhers.com/Bert to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/Bert. Forhers.com/Bert. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is a registered trademark of Novo Nordisk A/S. Get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions. Visit forhers.com.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite spots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
The Bert Show.
Do you guys remember this call from a couple of days ago? This was like, I think on Valentine's Day.
My husband is the most awesome man in the world. I have a fear of driving since I was in high school and my friend died in accidents. So I never got my driver's license. And my husband drives me all the way from Dunwoody to Woodstock every morning, which is only a 20-minute drive while I'm in the car. But it's like an hour and a half for him on the way back. And he works overnight. He doesn't get a lot of sleep. He's the sweetest guy in the world, and I just want to know that I love him, and he's the best thing that's ever happened to me.
So your fear here is, I mean, your fear is paralyzing you so much that you can't go and get your driver's license or drive around in a car?
I can't. It paralyzes me, and I can't do it. And he works overnight and doesn't get any sleep because he drives me back and forth.
All right, so that was a couple of days on the show. We were like, we were kind of touched by that story,
sweet. You know,
like, because he's getting up so early and he's sacrificing every single day to help Shay out. Hey, Shay.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good.
Are you crying again just thinking about how awesome your husband is?
I'm not crying, but like I cried a few times since then because like you just don't understand like how hard it is and how, you know, you feel like you're selfish and you try and it doesn't. No matter how much you try, it doesn't seem to work, and it just—I don't know. It's pretty hard, and I know it's harder for him.
Well, explain to me, like exactly what happens to you at the thought of having to get behind the wheel.
Well, it's actually changed a little bit. Like before, I would just if somebody even cut me off or just things that happen in everyday, you know, life when you're driving. That usually don't affect other people, I'll pull on the side of the road, I don't even pay attention, and I'll just, like, start crying. Mm-hmm. See, I have my learners, I just don't have my driver's license, so he can ride with me. Mm-hmm. And it got better where I've stopped crying, and I've stopped doing that, but I freak out if I have to turn around to merge into another lane when I'm on the expressway. I can't. And it's not like a normal, like, freaking out. It's really bad where he's afraid that what if I got into a car accident? And the funny thing is, he says I drive really well. And I'm not sure if it's just that I had a lot of friends die. I was also raised by a strict parent who didn't want me to learn how to drive. And I left home before being able to get my license. And so basically, I mean, it's so bad that I used to live off of exit 7 in Roswell, and I would walk to work to exit 9. I would walk from exit 7 to exit 9 to get to work every single day.
How many miles is that?
Excuse me?
How many miles is that?
To be honest, I'm not sure. It would take me about an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
Like, so I would get up really early because I'd have to be at work around 8. And, like, I'm a really hard worker. And I never, before we got married, I'd never let it affect, you know, I didn't want it to affect my work. And I would just walk. And it kind of got scary because I just didn't have the money to be able to, like, to even
take the bus at that point. It was really bad. So. Right.
And there was one specific accident also that happened to you that's sort of like, I mean, it's been kind of the catalyst for all these fears and phobias.
Yeah, well, my friends, when I was in high school, I had a lot of friends that just died in car accidents for different reasons. Like, I had one friend that was just hit by a car, and he was on a bike. I had another friend that was hit by a drunken driver, actually two friends that were, and it was just really, I mean, it just really, it really scares me. And also, my mother was very, very, very strict, and she, I have tester's phobia also, where I buckle. I kind of buckle under pressure because you'll think I'm joking about this. I wasn't allowed to boil water when I was 18 years old.
Why not?
Because my mother was just really strict, and she just didn't think I was... She kind of, I don't know, she second-guessed everything I did.
So she made you feel like you couldn't do anything.
Yes. And so now, even though my husband's just like, he's like, say you can drive. When I get into the, I tried to take the driver's test like four or five times. I'll forget minor things like the left, like which is the left light and which is the right, like how to do the blinkers, how to do, like I just buckle.
And Shay, how old are you now?
I'm 21.
Okay. And the pressure is just, I mean, it just seems so enormous to you that obviously it's debilitating.
It really is, like, and it's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing because you interview for a job, and you know one of the questions is, you know, do you have transportation? And I have a car. I do, but it's just the fact that, you know, and my husband, he's so great. He's like, you know, I got this job, and they wanted me to go to Woodstock, and I actually told him I didn't get it, and he found out I got the job, and he told me to call back and say, yeah. Yes, I accept the job, and he's been driving me to work and he's just always done this, and it's not fair to him. He doesn't deserve that. He doesn't deserve to almost have to fall asleep on the road when he's driving home from work.
All right, so his trek every single day starts where?
Well, he's an overnight manager, and he gets home around 7 to 7:30 in the morning. Okay. We leave at 7:30. We leave Shanley Dunwoody, and we drive to Woodstock. I generally get to Woodstock around 8:07 a.m. He usually, like, sometimes I'll call him around 8:40, 8:45. He's still maybe 10 or 15 minutes away from home, depending upon traffic. And that's even taking, like, back ways, taking Roswell Road or taking – it's just – and it's sad because – and then it's not only in the morning, but he only gets about 5 or 6 hours of sleep because he has to leave by 3:15 or 3:30 at the latest every day to be able to pick me up from work at 5 when I go to Woodstock.
That's quite a deal.
Yeah. It seems that your mother, you know, or your parents or the way you grew up made you feel, like I said, that you can't do anything. So when you try and you look like you're about to fail and you think everybody's going to yell at you, maybe like your mom did, I do think that it is something that you eventually do have to conquer, because not only for him, but you don't want to pass this on to your children, because
no,
you
I
will,
don't.
You know.
I really don't. It's really sad to have to say. I was telling everybody at work, I was like, you know, last week I really just wanted some cheddar ruffles. Like, I really wanted those so badly. But my husband, you know, I knew he was tired. He didn't want to go take me. It's one of those things where you can't even do the smallest thing, like go across the street to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you take things for granted, but it's like, you know, I don't have the independence. I don't have. It's sad. So.
And I was going to say, you can tell in your voice that you're like out of breath and you're anxious right now, even just talking about it.
Mm-hmm. I'm pacing.
Really?
I'm pacing.
Poor thing.
Well, when we had you on a couple of days ago, we told you we wanted to try to get you some help because, mm-hmm. I mean, the sacrifice that your husband's making, and this is debilitating for you also. And Beth was listening at the same time, and she emailed us, and she's on the phone with you now. Hey, Beth.
Hi.
Hey, what exactly is it that you do?
I'm what's called a driver rehabilitation specialist.
Okay. There's an actual driving rehabilitation specialist for just this kind of thing?
Well, we work with a whole range of, you know, if you want to call it disabilities, we have people with physical disabilities, cognitive disabilities, learning disabilities, and also psychological. So, you know, in some cases, the biggest problem is the anxiety, not even necessarily some of the other issues. So, yeah, we work with folks with a lot of different kinds of problems related to driving.
When you were listening to Shay's story right now, did some of this sound familiar to you? Like, inevitably, it comes back to some of the parents that have planted these seeds of insecurity on her?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times some of the young people that I work with that have learning disabilities, for example, have had a lot of failure in their lives. And so trying to face driving, it's one more thing they're afraid to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it represents such a big, just like she was saying, such a big step in terms of your independence. But all their life, they've kind of learned that they don't do well at things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then I have other people. We have a young man right now who's about Shay's age, who's a triple amputee. And so he's starting to learn to drive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, people that you would never expect to be able to drive, you know, we work with all kinds of folks.
So what's the therapy on this?
Well, a lot of times, you know, kind of like when you think maybe traditionally of a phobia where you have to desensitize people, you know, it's putting the person in different situations. Obviously, in our vehicles, part of the plus is that there's, you know, controls on the other side. So, you know, unlike her husband, I can take over mm-hmm. if I need to, which makes a difference.
Yeah, because he used to be really scared to ride with me. He was like, because I'd shut down. Like, it wasn't good. I could be on the expressway, and I'd get so afraid that I would just, it's almost like I'd stop. And that's, you know, it doesn't make sense. And, I've tried, and it just, I don't know.
And, you know, sometimes it's a difference working with somebody different who's got no emotional investment in the situation. You know, your husband loves you very much and sounds like he works well with you, but sometimes when you've got someone who's, you know, completely detached from the situation, then it's, you know, the manner in which you work is different.
Mm-hmm.
And the ways in which that person can deal with you and get you through the different situations that currently are freaking you out can make a difference in trying to get you ready to be able to be tested and so forth. Because like you said, your actual skills aren't necessarily bad. You know, it's getting past the anxiety.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's just, and it's like the smaller things now, because at first I've always said, you know, it's because of all those car accidents. My aunt was in a really bad one, but she survived. But, I mean, like a lot of things. And then my husband and I were talking more yesterday, and he said, well, you know, sometimes he pointed out a lot of things in my life that go back to, like, I don't really make decisions too well. Like, I always like other people to help me with those things, and because I'm not yeah. used to being able to, you
yeah,
know.
That's certainly
it's
understandable.
Not,
yeah. Totally understandable.
It's more than driving,
yeah.
then.
Yeah.
It's everything.
Hey, Beth,
yeah.
do you think that it would be possible for us to get you together with Shay and see if you can help her out, and if so, maybe we can work out something where you could sort of take her on as a patient?
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, it's certainly worth a try to see and see if we can make progress.
That would be so, you, like, I sent you I sent all of you messages on the Burt Show, and I sent, I left a message for Tracy because you don't understand how much this means that you even offered. By no means did I come on to get this. I just want you to know that I really appreciate this.
Well, we understand the pull of the cheddar cheese ruffles.
Yeah,
that's really what did it for Jeff.
That's what did it.
That's cool.
And when you need chips, you need chips. And, yeah. and if you can't get
them. Sometimes you just want chips and you can't, you know.
Nothing between Jeff and food.
Yeah.
Beth, I want to ask a question. You know, we talked about how Shay seems to have these kind of deep-seated insecurities. And with the patients you work with in your rehabilitation, whether it be physical or emotional or kind of these, you know, mental for Shay, I take it when you go through the driving course that you kind of dive into those things with them.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it because I'm not just a driving instructor. I'm also an occupational therapist, so I've got a lot of training working with people, you know, with a wide range. And, I mean, many of the people over the years that I've worked with, you know, I'm the first person taking them back on the road after they've been catastrophically injured in a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they may have I've been out with people that, you know, their passenger died in the accident. So, I mean, you know, these are people where it's a big deal to get back on the road, aside from anything else that's wrong.
Right. How long does it usually take people to get rehabilitated?
It really varies.
Everyone's different.
You know, it's one of those things where you have to sort of take it at an individual pace. And, you know, the first time I work with her, I'll have a better idea, you know, what it's really going to take. But, you know, it's some people are a bigger challenge than others. So, you know, but usually after the first couple times when you start seeing that you can do it, you know, that starts to open things up. But, you know, again, it's an individual process for everybody.
Well, let's see if we can get you guys together. And, Shay, we'll get you together with Beth from Freedom and Mobility. And we'll see if she can take you on, and if so, then we'll follow along with you guys, and we'll get you some help that you wanted for a long time.
Thank you so very, very, very much. I thank all of you so very, very much. And my husband really does too. He said that when he heard you even say that, he was just like seriously. He was just, I mean, it just. We looked into like even driver's school and things of that nature. That's gotten to be very expensive and we can't afford that. And it was just, it's been hard. And I just want to say thank you.
Well, we can take care of that for you. Let's see how this goes. we'll get you on over to Freedom and Mobility. Maybe you'll have to walk over there or whatever. And we'll get you guys together and we'll see if we can make this work for you.
Thank you so much.
Is it cool to let us know what time and what part of town you'll be out driving around in?
Beth can take controls.
I know. I'm just saying.
She said that she can, if you know, Shay starts panicking, Beth will be driving. So
I'm just
it'll
saying,
be okay.
Is that cool, though? Just like Sandy Springs, Saturday at 2, like.
Watch out.
Yeah.
I'll send you emails. I'm leaving Shamley Dunwoody at this time. Turn here.
That'd be cool. I mean, I'm sure you'll do fine, but.
She's already going to do a good job. Shay, you can do it.
You can do it.
You can do it.
Thank you so much, Melissa. And by the way, I love you, Melissa.
Thank you.
So I just wanted you to know that.
Oh.
Yeah, she'll like you so much, Shay. Hey, Beth, thank you very much for your help. And we're going to put a link on over to Freedom and Mobility also from our website.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you.
The Burt Show.
All right, so Delta Burke yesterday checks herself into, I think it was the same hospital that Brittany was in.
Yeah, the UCLA psych ward.
Yeah,
a lot of people. That dude from Grey's Anatomy checked in there, too. Like, everybody wants to be near Brittany.
It must be in Beverly Hills, where everybody lives or something.
It's that one or the Cirque Lodge in Utah. Mm-hmm. Everybody checks into those.
I'm going to go to the Cirque Lodge for vacation this year.
And this one didn't have anything to do with drugs or prescription drugs or anything like that. She's got, like, this form of OCD, and she just hoards everything and can't throw anything away. It's fascinating, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people have it. Hey, Jessica, you're on
Q100. Hi, Bert.
Good morning.
Oh, my gosh, I can't believe I'm on the radio.
I'm glad you called. So you have the same type thing?
Oh, my gosh, I can't help it. Let me tell you, when my car was, like, breaking down, it was my first car, and I got it back in 2004. That's the year I graduated. And I broke the door off just so I could keep it. Oh, my gosh. And then, like,
you broke the door off what?
Yeah, like the inside of the door, like, you know, where the part where you roll up the window and
oh,
stuff.
So you have a memento from your first car.
Yeah, and I can't throw it away. It was such a crappy car. It was a neon.
Now, do you live your whole life like that? Like, you have to have these kind of symbols from your past?
My parents were always like, throw it away, you don't need it. And we moved down from New York back in 1998, and they got a dumpster and, like, threw out my whole bedroom. And then ever since then, when we moved down, I've kept everything. When I moved out of my house, my parents packed, like, 200 boxes.
Wow.
200 boxes filled with what? Just everything?
Just everything, from stuff to animals to clothes to books. I kept all my schoolwork up from, like, middle school when I moved down.
Why?
So was, like, yeah, I guess why? And was the whole house just consumed with all this stuff?
Yeah, like my whole bedroom, it was everywhere, and now it's in the basement, and it's taken up almost the whole basement. And I don't know why, but when I was single, I used to go out and buy like three pairs of shoes, maybe three or four times a week. So I've got like over 300 pairs of shoes.
Well, that's not uncommon. Yeah.
some women would honor that.
Yeah, they're like, go, girl.
When they showed the inside of Delta Burke's apartment or house, whatever it was last night on TMZ, it wasn't confined to just the basement. Every closet was consumed with stuff, and it was disgusting. It was so disorganized and just thrown.
They've done this. They've done specials like this on Oprah. They've done whole, you know, hour long specials mm-hmm. focusing on these people, and they can't even throw away leftovers that are in the refrigerator.
Really?
I mean, things are like rotting, mm-hmm. and then I mean, they can't sleep on their bed because it's like, you know, stuff stacked up 6 feet on their bed. They have animals with feces all over the house because
really?
they just can't get it together enough to clean it out. They never take out the garbage. Like, it's a sick disease.
It would drive me crazy.
Already crazy.
That's true.
It would be a different kind of crazy. Hey, Amber, good morning. You're on Q100.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. My best friend, her family hoards everything. And I mean everything they've ever bought, ever had. It's disgusting. And I think she kind of knows about it. And I don't want to hurt her feelings and be like, your family is crazy. But it's like I walk into their house when I'm going over there and I just want to clean, and I don't like cleaning.
And they can live with this kind of mess. It's just like things that are just strewn about, and there's no organization to it, right?
Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. Like, they have, like, Delta Burke hoards newspapers. They hoard newspapers. They hoard everything.
I've been in a house like that before. When I went on that trip to Venezuela last year, my tour guide brought me to this dude's house. He was like 65, 70 years old. And literally the walls of his house have become newspapers. Like, they're stacked so high, and he can't let them go that you have to sort of, like, jimmy yourself around the little aisle to get through the papers, the newspapers that he's compiled over the last, like, 4 or 5 decades.
Now that I never thought of it, but there was a guy in high school that I remember would go over to his house, and this guy's mom was a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the argument was she needed to keep everything that she ever got that was printed in case she needed to reference it. So it was all referenced, and his house was the same exact way. Like, stacks and stacks of newspapers, like, and they're all, in her mind, they're in all some sort of order. But magazines, she never threw away junk mail.
Oh,
in case she ever needed it to help. Look at Tracy. Tracy's throwing up.
Because she's so organized.
In my mind, I'm thinking you might need to reference it one day, but it's going to be such a pain to actually find it that you'll never use it as a reference. And people that hang on to magazines or newspapers because of references, go to the internet.
Do you ever really go, right? You don't need that anymore.
No.
Good morning, Q100.
Oh, is it me?
It's you.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Okay. I've got just, like, I can't stop collecting clothes. Like, my closet is ridiculous. Like, stuff from when I was 5 is still sitting in my closet, and sometimes, like, I just can't even walk in. It's so bad.
Why are you keeping clothes from when you were little?
I don't know. I just, like, my mom tells me to, like, never throw that kind of stuff away, so I never have.
Is it, like, a control issue thing?
I don't know. I don't know if it's, like, sentimental or if it's just, like, I don't know.
Could it be a generational thing? Like, are we... Because I'm almost wondering, I'm trying to think of, like, our grandparents who had to deal with depression and stuff like that, and then the rationing that went on during the war, World War II, and all that stuff. Like, maybe, not that it started there, but, like, maybe they just, our parents grew up with, don't throw it away, recycle it, keep it, blah. Because I
think that's too simplistic. I think in the cases that we're talking about with, like, Delta Burke, I think it's a control thing.
But
it's an OCD
thing. I'm wondering if that's where, like, what this girl just said was her parents said, save that, you may need it someday. Like, that's like a mantra of my dad's. He's mm-hmm. like, he's not a big thrower away. So we have an attic full of stuff. Now, he doesn't keep, like, random newspapers and things, but, like, just stuff that he probably could have sold at garage sales or on eBay or in Craigslist or whatever he keeps. And I almost wonder if it's because his parents were like,
can't throw anything out.
We have to keep what we have.
I think it's the exact opposite of that. I think something of theirs, sentimental, you know, value was thrown out when they were little or they lost something. I think it's the complete opposite.
Could be.
Well, I think the cure for it, not for the OCD, not the Delta Burks, but, like, I also would ask people, how many times have you moved? Because I think anytime you have to pack that stuff up and move, because, like, in the case of your father or people who've been in their house for 20 years, well, of course you're going to compile stuff. But if you've had to box that stuff up and move from apartment to apartment, you learn to not be, it's not as sentimental as it used to be.
Moving. And this is a totally different thing we're talking about. We're talking about just things being thrown in the corner and then piling up. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of hoarding we're talking about. And then it just consumes your entire house. Hey, Rachel, you're on Q100.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I have to agree with what you were saying about it could be something in the past, because my mom will collect everything. We've got our pantry is literally half full of plastic bags,
mm-hmm.
just because we might need them. Mm-hmm. And I think it happened a long time ago when our house burnt down and we lost everything.
Sure. You can see how that could do something
so
to you.
I think that might have been a traumatic experience because now, you know, I'm 20 years old, but I still live with my parents, and there are times when I want to get rid of things from my childhood. That way I can make room for, you know, more things. And my mom will come into my room and see me, and she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm kind of getting rid of it. She's like, no, don't get rid of it. So I have to take it out in secret. That way she doesn't know that I'm getting rid of it because that's just the way that she is.
That's your next step, Tracy. This is it for you. This OCD step. This is the next one for you.
I hope Haas got all their phone numbers because I want to go clean their houses.
If you were a hoarder, it would be way more organized. Like, you would have all these magazines from 1984 or whatever, but you would know exactly where they were.
They'd be in chronological order.
Match one OCD person with another one with a different thing. Like, Tracy's OCD about being clean, and these are about hoarding, and just match them together and be like buddies, like the buddy system, and everything would be all right.
That's the worst insult you can call Tracy. You're a hoarder. Hoarder.
How dare you?
I'm not a hoarder.
I will cut you.
Now, if it's a control thing why people hoard, why are you, like, what's your deal with throwing everything away immediately?
I just think it's the complete opposite. I mean,
but it's a control thing too, right?
Oh, it's definitely a control thing. I mean, if I...
Honestly, how often do you and Scott get in a fight because you throw something away of his?
A lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
Weekly?
We put it in the attic, and then if he doesn't need to go in the attic after like a month or two, I'm like, get rid of it. Like, there's no need to have it.
Do you say get rid of it, or do you get rid of it?
You're just throwing his stuff away, aren't you?
Both.
You're just throwing his stuff away.
How many, if you were to make a list right now of things of his that you've thrown away that he doesn't have any idea are gone right now? Multiple pages?
Yes.
Oh. I bet it's like a Bible.
Yep.
But he hasn't noticed. What he doesn't know can't hurt him.
Let's hope he's
That's always
listening.
The rationale. He hasn't worn it in months. He'll never know.
The Burt Show.
I want a little honesty this morning. And I want you guys to call up and kind of narc on yourself. And the situation I'm looking for is you're basically a pretty normal person. You know, pretty even keel. But either he or she did something so bad to you during a breakup, or you found out maybe he was screwing around or she was screwing around, and you just snapped and you did something that you normally would not do. And we've talked about this before. And I think that the great example is, what's that movie? Where Waiting to Exhale?
Oh, yeah. Waiting to Exhale. When Angela Bassett goes into her soon-to-be ex-husband's closet and then sees all his stuff and decides to chunk them all in his car that's parked out in the front of the house, and then she torches it and just burns everything.
She just lost it. So it's a pretty even-keel person, but I'll tell you what, during a breakup, when things can get so emotional, or when you find out that they're screwing around on you, things can get so emotional, you could just turn into a person that you're normally not.
Yeah, absolutely.
And everybody's been there at one point or another.
Violent, throws things off balconies, you name it.
Mm-hmm. Could be like keying a car. I mean, you normally wouldn't do that.
Right.
You're so upset before you know it, right along his car, right along her car.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make it any more right, but you did it.
Right. I've heard of the case of the clothes where, and this was like a friend of a friend, so it wasn't a close friend, but something about going into the closet and actually cutting up the clothes. So not burning them or anything, but going up and destroying them in the closet.
I've told you guys I know about the girl that caught her boyfriend cheating on her. So she went into his wallet and took all of his cards, his credit cards, his driver's license. She went in and also found his social security card, birth certificate, and torched it all.
Jeez.
And her point was she wanted him to think of her every time he was standing in a line, every time he was making a phone call, because you know how much of a hassle it is to get any of that stuff back.
Yeah.
Every time he made a call, he wanted to think of her. So she told him, here's what I did yesterday.
Yeah.
I took it all.
Ryan told me one time when he was breaking up with a girlfriend, you guys know how gentle he is. He and a girlfriend were breaking up, and he actually punched the windshield of a car and cracked it.
Yeah, you could just do stupid stuff like that. 404-741-Q100. I'm bringing this up because Melissa had a story earlier this morning about this woman in DeKalb County, a police officer. She's been on the force 13 years. She separated from her husband, and I'm not sure how long ago, but he's a DeKalb County police officer also. Well, her husband, or former husband, or soon-to-be husband, started dating a woman named Samara Barkin. And Teresa, the police officer, she didn't like that too much. Kind of snapped on him a little bit. So she went and used a classified law enforcement computer to look up Samara's personal information. It was actually the Georgia Crime Information Center. And as a police officer, you actually sign a waiver saying you won't use that for this kind of thing. It's against the law. So she goes in and she finds out all this information about the woman that her soon-to-be ex is dating. And she mails flyers to all of Samara's friends and her family. The word homewrecker was written on top of the page. Then there was Samara's face. And then right below that was the word ashamed. And then three Bible verses about adultery were printed on the flyer as well.
Dang. That's rage right there.
That's rage. Relationship rage. Her mom got one. Her neighbors got one. Her former boss got one. And a whole bunch of other relatives got one, too.
Jeez. That was methodical rage.
Right. How are you going to beat that? Right. Good morning, Jen. You're on Q100. Hi.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
All right. How are you?
I'm doing great.
All right. Your relationship rage, it turned you into somebody that you normally wouldn't be.
I was always very passive, didn't want confrontation, and my ex-husband before, you know, came to me, said he wanted a divorce. I said, okay, that's fine. But he had moved me to Atlanta. He was military. I had no family here, so I was like, you know, my name is on the lease too, so we're just going to have to get along. You go in the spare bedroom, whatever. And I went home for a weekend to visit my parents and came home, and he moved his girlfriend in.
Oh.
Mm. You're kidding. Mm. Into the apartment?
Yes.
With your stuff?
A two-bedroom apartment, mine's that.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, that's fine. But I'm still paying half the rent. So I moved my boyfriend in.
Into the second room?
No. I kicked him out and moved them into the spare bedroom with a twin bed. And I had the master bedroom with the king-size bed.
So wait a second. There was a point there where all of you were living in the same apartment at the same time?
Yeah, my mother told me if I ended up on Jerry Springer, she'd kill me.
Yeah, you did nothing more damage to yourself than you did to him by keeping him in
no,
the house.
No. He could not believe that I did that because he was basically trying to get me to go out, but just to be spiteful and mean, I wasn't going to do it.
So I'm curious, who ended up being the one to move out first?
He did.
Oh, yeah, he did. Okay. He didn't want anything to do with that.
Who was the one to do something loud enough so that the ex could hear it first?
Who? Me.
You did?
Of course
you
did.
In fact, his girlfriend walked in on us.
Uh-huh.
All right. You made sure. She walked in on us while the door was wide open and we were screaming at as loud as we could.
Yeah. Well, who knew? Say I didn't put the padlock on the
door. I'm sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm sure. Good morning, Q100.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Wow. Wow. You do not piss off a Texan, let me tell you that much.
What happened?
Okay. I was dating this guy about 6 or 7 years ago when I was still in college. And I kind of cared about him. I didn't think it was going to really go anywhere. So I wanted to break it off. And according to him, we were having such a quote-unquote good time. He told me he had a terminal illness. I was young, I was a freshman, I was stupid, I fell for it. And you know how when you take pictures with a digital camera, it'll save the time and date in the lower right-hand corner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, apparently, he enjoys taking pictures of himself having fun with other girls when he's supposed to be in the hospital.
Oh, no.
And one of the girls he was messing around with found out what was going on, found out about my existence, first off, and she sent me these pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So that I would notice the date and time. And I got so pissed off, so unbelievably pissed off. And I grew up with brothers and Boy Scouts and soldiers. So I know, No. You don't do that.
She's about to do something else. Go ahead.
Well, he collected vintage T-shirts, and some of them were really expensive. Okay. And he had literally like 300 of them. And so I wanted to make sure he wasn't going to be able to go anywhere, like, as though he were in a hospital. I went through all of his clothes. I cut them up with scissors. I deleted all the entries in his cell phone so he couldn't call anybody. He doesn't remember phone numbers. Who remembers phone numbers?
Right.
And I went to his car with my brothers, and they helped me spray paint it pink and then spray paint male genitalia on top of it.
Whoa.
So his pretty little souped-up Ford Mustang wasn't really so pretty anymore.
See, when you start recruiting family members,
right?
That's a whole different level of loco.
That's an
right
army
there.
Of crazy.
Dive into vandalism with your family members.
Hey, Amanda, you're on Q100.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
Thank you.
Well, my ex broke up with me. He had cheated on me, and you know, whatever. And when we broke up, he left all his mail at my house. So I just started leaving credit card applications in places, you know, just kind of laying around. And within, I think, 2 months, he had like 3 credit cards open in his name.
Oh, no.
That'll jack up your credit score a little bit.
Yeah, well, what can you do?
What can you do?
You can hear the remorse.
She's passive-aggressive about it.
Yeah, well, he cheated on me, so what? There he goes.
Angel.
Hello, how are y'all?
Okay, good. Your relationship rage, what
first,
happened?
I just want to tell y'all, I was only 18 at this time, and I'm 21 now, so this was a long time ago.
Oh, you're a totally different woman now.
Wait, you say you're 21 now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm 21.
Okay.
I dated a guy, and he was only 17 when I found out he was cheating on me. I was only 18, so it's not that bad. But he lived in a very protective home. His parents knew, like, everything about him, and well, thought they did. Well, he was into a bunch of bad stuff, and when I found out he cheated on me, first I called his mom and told his mom everything. Which is pretty bad for a 17-year-old. But the girl that he cheated on me with, the two girls, I told them both that he had syphilis.
Did they believe you?
Yeah, they did believe me, actually. I got my best friend, who he also cheated on me with, in on everything, and his sister. And we told two girls he had syphilis. And then when I found out he was dating another girl, like it was like a year later, we made sure that she knew that he had maybe had syphilis or had it. Or didn't get it treated or whatever, but he's not been able to find anybody to date because his sister continues to tell everyone that he has syphilis.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that even a rumor of an STD is going to keep you out of the dating pool pretty well.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all that takes.
And you guys remember the ones in high school who had the rumor attached to them?
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't go anywhere near them. Good morning, Valerie. You're on Q100.
Hi.
Hey.
I was married to this guy. He was watching my kids while I was at work one day. And I came home, and my kids had told me he had been messing around with some girl in my house. Mm. So we got into an argument, so I was trying to get out of the driveway. I was pissed. I backed over his foot with my tire and then went over it again and then went over again and knocked my whole patio off of my house.
It was an accident. I hit
him three times.
It was all an accident.
Yeah.
Right, reverse drive. I couldn't figure out which way I wanted to go.
I couldn't get control of my car.
Amanda, you'll be the last call. What's up?
Hey, I was engaged for about a year, and the wedding was about 3 months away, and I had found out he had been cheating on me. And so we broke it off because he was cheating with one of my friends, and he told me that he wanted the ring back, which I kind of figured he would because he's the guy that will use that ring again. Before I gave it back to him, I had the diamond switched out for a cubic zirconian and gave it back to him. And he is now engaged to somebody else, and she is wearing that ring.
Beautiful.
You know what?
Beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
That's
well played.
That
well
needs
played.
To be applauded. Yes. Well played. Checkmate. Yes. Game over.
That's fantastic.
To see nonviolent.
Yes.
Passive aggressive.
Yes.
But you win.
That's right.
Because eventually, she's going to find out it's a CZ.
Yes.
And it's going to be on him.
Oh, yeah.
And he'll track it back to her.
Yes.
That's beautiful.
The Burt Show.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.